Amory and 107.5 FM W298 DK Amory, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. More mysterious drone sightings over a number of states, including New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, and Virginia.
The aircraft now getting the attention of public officials. Mendham Borough Mayor Christine Serrano has organized a task force to track, record, and share drone sightings.
At this rate, they need to let us know if it's their equipment, if our government owns this. And that's it.
In a bulletin obtained by ABC News, the New Jersey Division of Fire Safety warning downed or landed drones should not be approached.
ABC's Ike Ajachi. New details on the killing of United Healthcare CEO Brian Thompson. Police now say the suspect did not take a bus, took the train to Pennsylvania. And we've learned that the FBI and NYPD spoke to Luigi Mangione's mother a day before he was arrested. American Travis Timmerman handed over to the U.S. after months in a Syrian prison. But there's no word yet on the whereabouts of American Austin Tice. This is ABC News. A health scare for Nancy Pelosi.
We're told that the former Speaker of the House sustained a hip injury after falling down some stairs and is likely to require surgery. She is currently hospitalized there in Luxembourg. She was traveling with that group of lawmakers there to commemorate the 80th anniversary of the Battle of the Bulge. The question is whether or not Pelosi, who is 84 years old, would get the surgery if necessary there in Europe, or whether she would first come home and have the surgery here in the United States.
ABC's Jonathan Carl. A California couple is dead after being shot and killed while out of the country. ABC's Alex Stone has details.
50-year-old Gloria Ambrees and 53-year-old Rafael Cardona were sitting in a Ford pickup truck when they were shot and killed while on vacation in Michoacan, Mexico. A local mayor is married to Cardona's sister. Mexican police say forensic experts are reviewing ballistic evidence and that an investigation is underway. Alex Stone, ABC News.
And I'm Dave Packer, ABC News.
Hey folks, this is Carrie Joy with your Work Money Minute. We have all stopped at a convenience store for a necessity or two. A bottle of water, a half a gallon of milk, or a bag of pickle-flavored potato chips. I mean, those are necessities in your house too, right? But there is a cost for that kind of convenience, as much as 54% more. Now, when I was in my early 20s, like some of you, I may have done most of my shopping at the 7-Eleven around the corner from my apartment. And boy, oh boy, I wish I had known that shopping regularly at convenience stores instead of supermarkets meant I was paying a lot more for my groceries. A National Institute of Health survey recently found that milk can cost 11 to 14% more at those stores, apples and bananas 10 to 53% more, and cereal can cost as much as 54% more. So, for your regular food shopping, keep more money in your wallet and head on over to the supermarket. For more tips on saving, text MONEY to 88285. This is Carrie Joy saying take good care.
I'm James Kelly with WLAK News. Your news roundup in quick podcast form. Find it anytime on the WLAK website at lakeair.radio.
For Civic Media News, I'm Savannah Tomei Olson. The lawsuit over Act 10 will almost certainly end up in front of the Wisconsin Supreme Court, intensifying the race for a seat on the bench in the spring. Here's Judith Ruiz Branch.
The judge ruled Act 10 is unconstitutional because it treats different groups of public employees unequally. The controversial 13-year-old law strictly limits public sector bargaining rights in Wisconsin. Michael Childers is a labor education professor at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. He says the law also brought the state back more than 50 years, as Wisconsin was a pioneer in the fight for workers' legal rights.
It was the first state in the nation that allowed formally for public sector bargaining and then became the first to basically greatly curtail bargaining rights for all but police and fire in the state.
Act 10 would be struck down pending a final decision by the Wisconsin Supreme Court, which currently has a liberal majority. The Republican-controlled legislature that appealed the recent decision is hoping to drag out the case. But the public workers who challenged the law hope the court rules before a new justice is seated next year. Wisconsin's public sector laws of 1959 and 1962 are regarded as turning points in the legal rights of workers. Childers says Wisconsin's union participation was always higher than the national average until the passage of Act 10 in 2011.
They had rights similar to what most workers in the private sector in the United States enjoyed, which is the ability to bargain over hours, wages, and all other conditions of work.
Childers says Wisconsin experienced the largest decline of union membership in the U.S. over the past decade. For Wisconsin News Connection, I'm Judith Ruiz Branch. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Savannah Tomei Olson.
This is your hometown radio, Refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. Chance of freezing rain and snow today, highs in the low 30s. For tonight, snow and freezing rain, maybe some sleet mixed in with a low near 30. Cloudy, 38 on your Sunday. For Monday, slight chance of snow with a high around 36. On Tuesday, mostly cloudy, 27.
Currently 26 degrees.
Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, we talk about news deserts and what that means to our politics. We'll wrap it all up with This Shouldn't Be a Thing. I hope you can join us.
Matinair on Air, weekday mornings at 10.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Up North News Radio.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome to the Cripescast. I'm your host, Charlie Behrens. We are powered by Everlight Solar, and here's this week's episode. Folks, welcome to the Cripescast. This week we are talking about Aldo Leopold. He is one of the greatest conservationists ever to live. He is born in Iowa, but I think Wisconsin's going to claim him. As a Wisconsinite, I'll just say he's Wisconsinite. One of the greatest ecological writers of our time. A Sand County Almanac is celebrating 75 years this year, and we are talking with Buddy Heffaker, who is the president and executive director of the Aldo Leopold Foundation. He's been there for 20 years. Great guy. He's also essentially in charge with taking care of Aldo's farm, the land that he based a lot of a Sand County Almanac off of. And in addition to the great environmental work the foundation is continuing to do today, we dive into all that. But a lot of this is really just diving into the work of Aldo Leopold and what he has done to essentially getting your average person to care about the environment, which I think he did successfully 75 years ago. And that work is still needs to be done and still is being done. So anyway, we have a real fun conversation, and I hope you enjoy it. And before we get to that conversation, I want to remind you, we're still raising money for Doctors Without Borders. You can go to doctorswithoutborders.org to donate today. Thank you all for listening. And here's my conversation with Buddy Heffaker. Thank you so much for coming on.
Excited to be able to be in conversation.
So 75 years, Sand County Almanac is celebrating an anniversary this year. And what do you think it is about this book and Aldo Leopold that has transcended decade after decade after decade of environmentalists and conservationists?
Well, I think, Charlie, you got to start with just Leopold's excellent writing. I mean, you know, he conveys complicated scientific ideas into just kind of really elegant little poems almost. And I like to say he kind of just captures what a lot of us feel when we're outdoors looking at wildlife, hunting, fishing, hiking. And he just can say it better than any of us. And so when you read his writing, you kind of immediately like, oh, yeah, that's what I think. That's how I feel. But I just can't say it that well.
Sand County Almanac is a book that I read, I don't know, in college. And then I've always had, it's like one that sits on the shelf and you don't really. But my sister actually just gave me a copy of it again for because she was staying at my place. And it was really cool. So I just started reading it again and kind of rediscovering it a little bit. And there was this one passage, I think it was early on in the sort of collection of essays, and it was about cutting down this tree at his farm, and he goes through all the ring. The tree had been struck by lightning, and it starts off with him burning the wood, and it goes from burning the wood to thinking about cutting the tree down, and then cutting the tree down. It's him and the guy with the saw, and they're cutting through these rings of the tree. So he goes back in time, and each ring of the tree talks about what happened, what that tree saw, and how that tree saw, like, the last elks leave. Yep. The Midwest, or I mean, there were elks there, you know. Even Elkhart, Indiana used to be named Elkhart, Indiana, you know. And so he just goes back in time, just using the rings of the trees. And then I was out in the garage right before this, actually, just sawing a 4x4, and I looked down and I got the center piece. So you're looking at the rings, and I thought about that. So, I mean, it connects in such a cool way. Everybody knows the rings of the trees, and everybody can go back in time, and sort of he picks out these historical references and shows the decline of the turkey from Wisconsin. Yeah. Back then. And reading it now, you know, the turkey has come back, but other things have left Wisconsin. So it's just the idea of time and of what we've lost and what we've regained as a society. It's just cool. It's cool to see.
Yeah, I think, and that's one of the best essays, The Good Oak. And he does a great job, like you say, of kind of capturing a moment in the 1940s, really when things were kind of grim for the outdoors and conservation. We were losing the elk and the turkey. And he, you know, his essay, Marshland Elegy, presumes that sandhill cranes are going to go extinct, or at least get removed from the state of Wisconsin. And so now we can read like this call that, hey, we got to wake up and take care of these things that make sure we have clean air, clean water, healthy wildlife habitats. And we have some success stories. We have cranes back. We have turkeys back. We have elk back. So it's really kind of fun to read this really insightful ecologist who could assess the time and look back and then assess where we've come and where we still have to go.
Yeah. Yeah. It's cool to find that combination of a great writer and environmental, you know, ecologist. I don't even know if environmentalist was a thing back then, but that's what it takes in order to like break through. I mean, I feel like, how do you feel right now the environmental movement is in terms of conveying the importance of the issue? Because how many years in a row have we heard that, like, what is it? The clock, the doomsday clock is,
yeah,
it is seconds closer to nothing really breaks through on the environment. I don't think I think it, well, let me just say it. It's harder to get stuff on the environment to break through. And I'm not sure why, because it's something that affects us all. And yet we all collectively kind of don't care.
Yeah. You know, it's really interesting. I think Leopold would have suggested that was true even when he was writing his book, right? Like he was writing it, asking people to care. And kind of it was the culmination of decades of working and not getting people to care or think about these things. So I think the challenge may still be the same. Leopold also had the benefit of he was writing when there just weren't as many other voices out there, both positive to care about these things. And, you know, the challenges of competing with social media and all this kind of information flow that we get as individuals these days. So I think it's just a more competitive environment, kind of, so to speak. And then, you know, it's really just kind of an ongoing, interesting dilemma, because surveys show people actually care more about the environment and know more about the environment and how it operates than ever before in history. And yet, what does that mean? How do we actually take care of it? It's still so challenging and complicated that we're not making the progress we probably need to on several fronts.
Yeah, and I think that is true. I think people do. If you ask them, is it an issue? Should we take care of it? I think yes and yes. I think what you probably just have is industry is really good at sort of saying they're doing the environmentally right thing, but then not really doing the environmentally right thing. And collectively as a whole, between and we're all guilty of it. I'm very guilty. Yeah. Of it. I fly for my work, you know, and all that sort of stuff. So but it's the idea of you know, saying this is recyclable, for instance, for plastic, knowing damn well it is not going to get recycled and that only a very small percentage of plastic bottles actually get recycled. But people feel like they're doing the right thing. So I think the game has become less about getting people to care about it, because people now care about it. So then those companies realize that and they're like, all right, let's give them some to allow them to keep using our product, like greenwashing or whatever, even though we know this is just making the problem harder. So it's like continuing to re-educate and like break through. And it's tough. It's tough. I think people don't respond well to facts necessarily. It's more emotion. Bringing back to Aldo Leopold, that was what he was really good at, was about getting to the emotion of it.
Well, yeah, I think several things you point out there. One is, yeah, Leopold was ultimately a storyteller, right? He was trying to create these little vignettes that people, whether you're cutting a tree down or watching a crane fly by or out hunting grouse, that you would think about your connection to the natural world and how you, you know, should care about it and for it. And so there's science in the book, but it's not really a scientific book, right? It's a book of essays and stories that help bring to life the land around us. And then the other thing is, and Leopold realized this, it's not easy. You know, one of my favorite lines out of the book is, in our attempt to make conservation easy, we've made it trivial. And it's not trivial. It is really damn hard. As you just pointed out, like there are all these things that kind of work against us and kind of motivate bad behavior, and to line up our values and our economies and our ecosystems, that just ain't easy to do.
It's funny. It's funny because what he just said in that sentence was exactly what I was rambling on for, like, ever trying to say. Speaking of which, he has a really good knack of summing up a whole thing with just one sentence. Like, there's this one sentence that I love, sort of in the age of AI, really, and this information age, is what a dull world if we knew all about geese. You know, it's like one of my favorite lines in the whole thing, just because there's, you know, I think we're all chasing this like all knowing thing, this thing that will work for us essentially. And then what a dull world it would be, you know, with taking out the mystery. But at the same time, you see humanity wants to progress and keep going down these roads. And what do you think the marriage is between technology and the environment? And what do you think Aldo Leopold would say were he alive today about sort of what's going on with AI, the amount of carbon that takes, and also the potential for AI to help resolve some complicated environmental issues?
Yeah, you know, I mean, this is a line not out of a Sand County Almanac, but out of his other writings, where he describes the oldest task in human history is to live on a piece of land without spoiling it. And in that essay, he's talking about how technology and innovation kind of make our lives better. And yet, if we're not careful, in the end, kind of undermine, you know, what really makes a good life. And so he was always a little suspicious of technology. And I think what he was really just asking us to do is be more thoughtful and more intentional about where and how we allow technology into our lives, so it's working for us, not kind of knowingly or unknowingly against us. And I think that's where getting the frame right is still the real challenge. And I'll quote another Wisconsinite, Gaylord Nelson, former governor and senator of the state of Wisconsin, the conceiver of and kind of founder of Earth Day. So, I mean, I don't know your age, Charlie, but I haven't known a world that hasn't included Earth Day. Like it happened in the spring of 1970. I was born in 1970.
Are you asking me if you think I was born before 1970? Is that what you're doing?
I'm
now?
Just putting it out there. Like,
you know,
I'm
what? I'm going to get a better moisturizer right now. That's what I'm going to do. Sorry, I interrupted because, you know.
But he had this great line. Gaylord Nelson had this great line that, you know, it's really important that we understand that the economy is a wholly owned subsidiary of the environment. And so, you know, when you think about that line, what he's saying is, if we understood that all of our health and wealth flowed from a healthy ecosystem. Again, clean air, clean water, healthy food, the joys of seeing abundant wildlife. Then we would align technology in our economy to deliver those things, as opposed to an extra 50 cents, you know, profit margin on some widget that we create. And, you know, I'm slightly naively optimistic, but I think that's possible to us if we just kind of really are diligent about doing that. And again, asking technology in our economy to deliver the things that really make life possible. Let's start there, and then kind of rich in a broad sense.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's very, very well said. Is that, I mean, just look at all the billions of dollars we spend every year due to the adverse effects of climate change, you know, whether that be rebuilding Florida or this year with the hurricanes in South Carolina, North Carolina, Tennessee. So much money, that just goes from the federal government, from FEMA to people. And that's money that's just wasted, that had we taken care of it. And now, I mean, Malibu is on fire today, for instance, right, and everything. So it's, you know, it's just realizing, finding a way to connect the environment to the economy for your average person who's thinking about it. The problem is it's not an immediate hit. It's not like, if I do this, then this happens tomorrow. And it feels like the world kind of revolves around the stock market, which is all about tomorrow's gains. And there's not really an easy way around that other than maybe to just talk about that or find a way for
that
to hit. Yeah,
I think that's right. I think, you know, more of it's conversation and just, again, kind of assessing where real value and you know, kind of wealth comes from. But it's also making sure we do point out examples. Like, most people don't really realize that New York City gets its drinking water. What is this? We're talking 10 million people get their drinking water from the Catskills, and that, you know, that it's a protected watershed where the rain falls up there, infiltrates through the ground, gets naturally cleaned. And, you know, instead of a $1 billion water treatment plant. So we have these examples of kind of ecological solutions to providing the goods and services we need. We just don't really kind of highlight them. And then, to your point, kind of put them in understanding the short term versus long term investments and benefits.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think it's a real art form in doing that, though, which is why I think this book continues to resonate, because it found a way to do that, not just in the time it was written, but sort of through the centuries, or not the centuries, through the decades. And I think it has certainly inspired me to think about, how do you say this in a way that people really care? But even beyond that, even forget getting other people to care, coming up with different ideas that can help fix the problem in a way that, like, immediately almost makes money. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, if you could find a really environmentally efficient way to pull, to sequester carbon, to get carbon out of the atmosphere, you'd make a lot of money. You know, if you could find a way to remove microplastic from the water, in a sort of in a more efficient way than what it currently is, you'd make a lot of money. So it's almost like putting a bounty on these environmental problems. If you come up with a product that can do this, I think that's interesting too, you know. And then also highlight the problem as you do it, you know.
Yeah, so you're gonna solve that for us?
No, I tried. I'm not very good at it. I'm just working on building a woodworking bench out there. I don't know if you know where my handyman skills are. They're not quite there. I'm just throwing this out there for someone smarter than me to figure out, you know. Or someone, hell, if you really want to use AI, use it to figure out that situation. That'd be interesting. So anyways, before we
here's a story I want to share, Charlie, because you were talking about you were in your wood shop, and sometimes it's great. You know, Aldo Leopold was this amazing thinker ahead of his time, but it's also good to remember he was just human like the rest of us. So he had a wood shop in his basement and built a handmade cedar strip canoe, only to realize when he was trying to get it out of the basement, it was too big to get out of the basement. So we all run into our own challenges.
I feel a lot better now about a few things. That's hilarious. So speaking of which, he kind of comes from sort of utilitarian standpoint on the environment. And to maybe put that more plain English, he's a guy who didn't see the environment isn't just here to never touch and not use. He was like, how do we use it? And how do we maintain a healthy ecosystem with it? I mean, his dad was a carpenter, a woodworker as well. So is that where that came from for him?
Yeah. I think Leopold, that's the other reason I think it comes out in his writing in St. County Almanac is he's trying to bridge these worlds of the John Muir, just fence it off, protect it. It's beautiful. We're just going to kind of look at it, but we can't touch it. And then the utilitarian mindset that was embodied, and Muir was a little bit older than Leopold. The other was Gifford Pinchot, who was the first chief of the Forest Service. And he was, all about the wise use. And Leopold tries to bridge this gap, kind of recognize, we're going to have to use resources. I mean, we are living organisms, and yet we need them to be healthy so that we're healthy. And I think it comes from a family who, had a natural resource-based business. It came from his love of hunting and fishing and hiking and just being outdoors and engaging the world. But yet also having the chance and opportunity to kind of be in some really beautiful, special places and, stop for a moment and realize, wow, this is breathtaking. How do we protect it? So that's kind of his unique role in the whole conservation environmental history is he's kind of that straddle between total use and total protection.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a kind of a good one, I think, for a lot of people to see or just to grab to you can grab onto the love for it or the economic benefits or the beauty benefits, or anyone in between. And that's the thing where even farmers resonate with Aldo Leopold and same with conservationists.
Yeah, I often kind of use Aldo Leopold has been on the cover of Sierra magazine, which is a pretty, kind of leftist protectionist group, and also on the cover of Deer and Deer Hunting magazine. And I'm like, there's nobody who has been covered by both of those publications. And the story is positive about both of them. They kind of, whether you're a hunter or a vegan, there's something in Leopold that's there's something in his writing that helps me understand how I see the world and feel about it as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And where did Aldo Leopold's love for the environment come from? And when was it kind of realized for him? Give us a little bit of his backstory.
Well, so he grew up, he's born in 1887. That's a long time ago now, on the Mississippi River in Iowa. And just kind of from an early age, he loved to be outside, and his mother and father kind of encouraged him to be outside to hunt and hike. And then, as you mentioned, his family had this natural, they made furniture. So he also then saw the big cutover happen in the upper Midwest and kind of began to wonder where are these resources going to come from to keep making furniture and building houses and doing those kind of things. And that led him to a career in forestry, and that led him to the U.S. Forest Service, which was kind of an emerging conservation effort at the time in the early 1900s. And from there, he just kept getting these experiences of seeing wild places, and both where they were taken good care of and where they weren't, and began developing these philosophies of how people need to recognize their connection to the natural world. And then a transfer in the Forest Service brought him back to the Midwest. And ultimately, he got to pursue his real love, which was wildlife management at the University of Wisconsin, where he was the first professor of that program in the whole country.
It's very cool to see Wisconsin somehow at the forefront of a lot of environmental movements. Like you mentioned, Gaylord Nelson, the guy who, brought up Earth Day. Aldo Leopold, John Muir had connections to Wisconsin.
Yep.
It's pretty sweet. Where did he become a good writer? Do we know that?
Well, that's a great question, too. I mean, we always say he became a good writer by writing. You know, as a communicator yourself, you could probably attest to the more you do it, the better you get.
Yeah.
And he journaled, he wrote letters when he was away at school back to his parents. And then even those essays, you know, as you're thumbing through there, like he would write them and then it was called the cooler. He'd put them in his desk drawer and he'd walk away from them and then he'd come back and then he'd rewrite them. And then he was really open to challenging editing. So he'd have his wife read it. He'd have his students read it. He'd have colleagues read it and he would take that feedback. And then you can see after those edits, you know, that he would rework the essay.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. More mysterious drone sightings over a number of states, including New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, and Virginia.
The aircraft now getting the attention of public officials. Mendham Borough Mayor Christine Serrano has organized a task force to track, record, and share drone sightings.
But at this rate, they need to let us know if it's there.
On the Badger Sports Network from Learfield, this is your radio home for Wisconsin Badger basketball.
Across the line, right side, he'll launch it for three at the horn. He got it at the buzzer to the rim, and he sends it down with the left hand. Right side shooting for the win. Got it! Bronson Koenig! Step back three straight on. Got it! Sam Decker. Bo Ryan will win for the 300th time as the head coach of the Wisconsin Badgers. Snaps off another three. Booked it. Oh, my goodness. Don't wake him up. Greg Kaminsky, a single game school record, 43 points.
I can't believe I'm going to say it, but here it comes. The Wisconsin Badgers are going to the Final Four.
Badger basketball is on the air. Today's game is brought to you by American Family Insurance. Insure carefully. Dream fearlessly. Fabic Rents for all your equipment rental needs throughout Badgerland. And by SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the official ticketing partner of the Wisconsin Badgers. Find tickets to Badger games and more. SeatGeek. Welcome to the Badger Shootaround.
Good afternoon from Gainbridge Fieldhouse in downtown Indianapolis. This is our Wisconsin Badgers pregame show. The Badgers will take on the Butler Bulldogs out of the Big East Conference in the second game of this doubleheader, the Indy Classic game in front of us, Purdue and Texas A&M. And it's a tight one with Buzz Williams' Aggies leading 47-44 early on in the second half. Alongside Charlie Wills, I'm Matt LePay. Well, Charlie, Indianapolis, great city for, I mean, you've been a part of some Big Ten tournaments down here, and great city for it. Big crowd for this first game. Imagine going to be a lot of the Purdue fans hanging around for game two. This is, it's we'll talk with Greg Gard, too. It's a preview of coming attractions, if you will, because the Big Ten tournament will be here coming up in March. It's just it's a big-time environment, technically a neutral site game. But it's a big-time environment.
It's a big-time environment. Anytime Indianapolis can host an event, especially a basketball tournament, the city turns out. I feel like they pull out all the stops and make it just a great experience.
And for the Badgers, trying to snap what is now a three-game losing streak, and two out of the three were definitely either-or kind of games. Illinois making the plays late, obviously hitting their free throws, hitting the offensive glass. You go back to the Michigan game, Charlie, you and I worked that game together, those two bigs. Marquette was really good last Saturday. But if you're the Badgers, as you know, Greg Gard mentioned, like, yeah, you got things to fix, but you're certainly not in panic mode here because you know you got a pretty good team. You're just trying to figure out how to fix a couple of things, and those close losses suddenly become close wins. Everybody's telling you how great you are.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, don't over panic, especially this time of the season. You're just starting into the Big Tens. You lost because of a couple errors in Michigan, and you lost because of a couple errors on the road to Illinois. So the Marquette game, you got outplayed because Marquette is at another level at this time, right? So, yeah, I'm with Greg. I loved his comments about trying to refocus and just try to change small things, no huge adjustments.
It's a big day of college basketball. A lot of marquee games on the schedule here today and on Indy tonight. And the Badgers taking on the Butler Bulldogs for the first time since the Sweet 16
back in 2011 in New Orleans. Brad Stevens was the coach then, and Butler was en route to a second consecutive appearance in the national championship game. Approximate tip time, about an hour away. You know how these doubleheaders go, though. So we'll say, give or take, 1:30 or so Central Time. We'll go with the flow. In the meantime, we'll tell you that coming up next, we'll visit with Jesse Temple of The Athletic as we continue in 2 minutes. This is Badger Basketball from Learfield.
I am so sorry I was late. I was at the retina specialist getting my first AMD treatment. I was worried that the injection would hurt, but it was much better than I expected.
I'm so glad you're getting your AMD treated. Did you go to the same retina specialist that I see for my diabetic retinopathy?
Yes, and I was already having blurred central vision. And the retina specialist told me that by treating it early, I had a better chance of saving and even improving my vision.
It's important that we see an expert for our retinal condition. A retina specialist also treated my son when his retina detached several years ago. The surgery saved his sight.
When your vision is at risk from retinal disease, you need the expertise of a retina specialist. Retina specialists are highly trained physicians and surgeons who treat retinal conditions in adults and children, as well as severe eye trauma. If you experience blurred central vision, a curtain-like shadow in your vision, floaters, flashing lights, or wavy lines, see a retina specialist as soon as possible.
There are so many traditions built around the Wisconsin Badgers, game day and the mascot, which in 1889 was a real badger. It didn't go well. Eventually, the animal was replaced by a person. An on-campus contest chose the official mascot name, Buckingham U. Badger. Still, Wisconsin's official animal is a badger. But do you know which animal almost earned this title instead? Gray squirrel? White-tailed deer? Black bear? The answer is coming up. The original badger's nickname is actually associated with lead miners in the state, not the animals. It was the 1820s, and the miners often didn't have shelter in the winters, so they lived like badgers, digging tunnels into the hillsides where they worked. So was there almost another state animal? Yes, the white-tailed deer, which later became the official wildlife animal. But the history surrounding the badgers is a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
Lake Air, 1260 AM, WLAK.
This is the Badgers pregame show, joined as always by Jesse Temple of The Athletic. Well, I guess first order of business, Illinois, Jesse, while a much different team, is still really good. A couple of guys, international players, Jakučionis and Ivicic, really skilled, maybe one and dones, who knows. But it is impressive how Brad Underwood tweaks what he does, how he does it to the personnel, because what they do is considerably different from what we've seen from them in some previous years.
Yeah, they can shoot it very well. They get to the line. They made 22 out of 25 free throws, and it certainly helps when you out-rebound a team like Wisconsin 40 to 29. When you take long threes, there's a greater opportunity for offensive rebounds, but they can get up and down, and now Wisconsin is sitting here with a three-game losing streak, and it doesn't get any easier.
Yeah, that was the thing. You look at the final box score, and it felt worse than the box score indicated in terms of offensive rebounds for Illinois, second chance points. They got a flurry of them early and some timely ones late. We know Wisconsin has taken great pride for seemingly forever in its ability to secure the defensive rebounds, but that's hurt them here in the last couple of games.
Very much so. And when you're losing games, it's not just one reason or one person. But when you've got somebody like Steven Crowell out there and he doesn't get any rebounds, I know Greg Gard looked at that stat sheet after the game and wondered the same thing. You just need more productivity out of your big man, but you need it all the way across the board.
It was interesting. He's talked about it's not the first time that he's praised Jack Janicki. Now he says he's got to try to find more minutes for him. There's a lot of trust in him. As Greg says, he's more athletic than people might think. Xavier Amos, too. That was a highlight reel block. I know that's a snapshot. But you get an idea of maybe his athleticism and his versatility. So they're still in the midst of forming as a team, and they're going through hiccups right now. But those are a couple of guys who, moving forward, along with a veteran like Carter Gilmore, who just does a lot of dirty work stuff and can score a little bit as well. But those are the kind of guys that they're going to need if they want to get the depth that they maybe didn't have so much a year ago.
Right. Greg obviously at this point feels comfortable with a 9-player rotation. And in a given game, it's a matter of determining what the minute distribution is going to look like. Janicki, yes, the box score isn't going to jump out to you, but he's one of those guys who just does the right things, didn't turn the ball over at all in 17 minutes, made some nice passes to set teammates up. And you need consistency. You need to know what you're going to get out of your players on a game-to-game basis. And I think Xavier Amos is the type of player who's certainly worthy of getting more than the 12 minutes he got against Illinois because of the variety of ways in which he can impact this team positively.
Interesting matchup here today, the end of this four-game stretch. Butler's coming off a disappointing loss to North Dakota State, fell way behind in that game and then rallied and had a chance to win it. I guess credit to Thad Matta. I don't imagine he needs to get back into coaching, but this is his alma mater. He had a great run at Ohio State. When you think of Thad Matta teams, what's the first thing that jumps to your mind?
Well, I guess tough, hard-nosed. Obviously, Butler's playing in that image, and this is just another really difficult challenge. This schedule in the preseason has certainly not done Wisconsin favors, and I know that two of the games are Big Ten games, but Hinkle Fieldhouse is a very special place, and Thad Matta, even though that team has lost a couple games here, has a really solid unit.
And Patrick McCaffrey looks like he's found a home there. Connor McCaffrey's on the staff. Jack McCaffrey, their younger brother, has signed a letter of intent. So the Iowa connection shifting now to Butler. But Patrick he's really been shooting it well, which on one hand, it shouldn't be a surprise. On the other, he's well above his career average. So he's a familiar name for Badger fans to watch for.
Yeah, he is. And Wisconsin's going to have to play some better defense here. I mean, let's just be honest. I know we've talked a lot about how well this team has been able to score, but you're not going to win very many games if you're also giving up in the 80s. So obviously they're going to have to try and control things here against Butler.
All right. He's Jesse Temple of The Athletic. We'll take a break. Coming up next, our Badger Spotlight as we check in with Nolan Winter in a couple of minutes. This is Badger Basketball from Learfield.
This holiday season, fill your family's table with Jones Dairy Farm all-natural sausage, dry-aged bacon, naturally smoked ham, Canadian bacon, and Braunschweiger. I'm Philip Jones, CEO and sixth generation Jones, and I know the importance of bringing generations together for the holidays, from little ones to not so little ones, and those in between. Everyone enjoys Jones products. Jones Dairy Farm, making the holidays better since 1889 and a proud partner of Wisconsin Athletics.
To be a Badger, it takes dedication, perseverance, and an unstoppable drive for excellence. Our team at UW Health Sports Medicine is no different. We bring the same fierce Badger spirit to every surgery, therapy, and training, working tirelessly to keep Wisconsin's athletes at the top of their game. Whether it's nailing the game-winning shot or delivering top-tier care, UW Madison and UW Health are a dream team committed to achieving greatness. Together, we don't just deliver, we dominate. UW Health. Remarkable.
At U.S. Bank, when they say they're in it with you, they mean it. Not just for the good stuff, the grand openings and celebrations, although those are pretty great, but for all the hard work it took to get there, the fine-tuning of goals, the managing of cash and workflows and decision-making. They're in to help you through all of it, because together they're proving day in and day out that there is nothing as powerful as the power of us. Visit usbank.com to get started today. Equal housing lender, member FDIC, copyright 2024, U.S. Bank.
The big game, family, friends. We know you count on Alliant Energy to deliver the safe, reliable energy you need, whether you're watching the game, cooking your famous burger, or leaving a light on for loved ones. For us, it means going beyond the expected to make sure we're planning for the energy you need today and tomorrow. That way you can keep your eye on the ball and focus on what's most important to you. Find out more at AlliantEnergy.com/poweringbeyond.
Hey, Badger fans. Basketball season is here, and SeatGeek is here to help you experience all the action. SeatGeek makes it easy to find tickets so you can be a part of all the courtside celebrations this season. Whether you're buying or selling tickets to Wisconsin basketball games or to any other live event in your area, SeatGeek is the place to do it. SeatGeek is the official ticket marketplace of the Wisconsin Badgers. The most disruptive idea in ticketing? A ticket that works. Expect the expected. SeatGeek.
Hi, Drew and Jonathan Scott here, reminding you that a lot of life's firsts are better with help from American Family Insurance. Like your first home expansion, or your first big lightning strike.
There's a first for everything. Get the right home policy at the right price with the right help from American Families agents. Life's better when you're under American Families roof. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
Our pregame show continues with today's Badger Spotlight as we check in with sophomore Nolan Winter out of Lakeville, Minnesota. Well, his minutes have doubled, coming off an impressive performance, especially in the second half Tuesday night at Illinois. And you better believe he's enjoying this increased responsibility.
It's been awesome so far. It's been a really fun year. For me personally, my role, just really trying to do whatever it takes to win every night, whether it's playing more minutes of the four or the five, really whatever coach needs. And, you know, rebounding, I feel like something that I can bring to the team, along with stretching out at the floor, being able to hit the three ball at my size is very be very beneficial for us. So I'm really just whatever the game brings to us, and throughout the course of the game, I'm just trying to do whatever it takes to win. But yeah, it's been an awesome year so far.
I know the Coach Gard's always talked about you were more than willing last year. You never back down from sticking your nose in there. Yeah. But a little stronger, you feel like an increased strength has allowed you to you know, match up a little better with some of those big dudes that you're going to be up against day in and day out?
Yeah, I mean, I put a lot of time in with Snides in the weight room this summer, so obviously I think that's going to help. But I feel like I was raised by my parents to be like, whether you're down 50 pounds or 50 pounds, you got to just, it's all heart. So, I mean, that was kind of my motto last year. Like, I don't care if it's Zach Edey I'm going up against or whoever, like, I'm just going to go in there, throw my body in there and just go to work. So, but yeah, I feel stronger this year for sure and more capable of kind of holding my own.
What's the bigger challenge? The reason I want to preface the question, you know, I work with Brian Butch, mm-hmm. and he talked about he kind of hated going up against teams that maybe 6'7", 6'8", yeah. as tall as it. Yeah. Now, you've gone the Zach Edey's of the world, mm-hmm. you know, guys like, you know, with Arizona, with Michigan. What's the one that you kind of like, what's the bigger challenge? The smaller guys with quickness or the big dudes? Or
honestly, as crazy as it sounds, but Steven would agree too. We talk about this. Playing against like smaller, quicker dudes, like, we should be able to dominate, and I think we've held our own against them. But, like, yeah, they just love to run around and stretch out the seven-footers on the court, which is fine. And I think we did a solid job kind of guarding there and getting out there. But it's a completely different game when you have five dudes that are all that can play point guard, and then you got me and Steve out there who's 7 foot. So, yeah, it's just a completely different game. But that's kind of what basketball is now. Everyone's able to run around and shoot and do that kind of stuff. So we're just trying to adapt to that, and I think we've done a pretty good job. But, yeah, playing against those guys, it's kind of like we're ready for Big Ten play to come around and these bigger opponents. So,
that's exactly what Brian said.
Yeah.
Well, the good news is you're a big dude who can move around and can shoot. So that's something that part of what's going on now is right in your wheelhouse, right? I mean, you're big dude, big guy, but you can step out to three and you feel pretty comfortable there, right?
Yeah, and we've made it a point of emphasis. I got to get more up. I just got to stay confident in it. I know I'm a good shooter. Throughout my childhood, I played like point guard, so I know I got that shot in me and just kind of what it takes. So just trusting it and getting more up and letting it flow.
How fun is this offense right now?
It's awesome.
Fans are loving it, what you're doing. What makes it that much fun for you?
All five of or everyone who steps on the court loves the offense. It's fast-paced. It kind of feels like a newer era of basketball. It's getting up and down. And every time someone catches it, we're looking to score. It's not like, okay, let's get it on. Let's go through this set and do that kind of stuff. It's like boom, boom, shot, okay, moving on, that kind of stuff. And I think players love it. I mean, it's high-scoring offense, as we've seen. It's able to get everyone involved. Everyone who's got a shot is willing to shoot, and yeah, it's been awesome.
As we talk the Big Ten season, you're going through the two December games, and I know you guys operate one day at a time, one game at a time, but is there a part of you that kind of peeks ahead, like at this new Big Ten in Oregon, Washington, SC, UCLA, like, wow, what's this going to be all about?
I'm excited for that California trip we got coming up. Or USC and UCLA?
Yeah, January. It's a good place to be in January.
Yeah, we're all looking forward to that. So, yeah, just being able to play these new teams in the Big Ten, see how we match up with them. That'll be fun going out to Cali and have them coming here. It's fun, and I love that it's kind of expanding. It's bringing new competitors into the Big Ten and, yeah, get a little taste of the West Coast.
What's the most important thing or couple of things that you learned last year as a freshman that are helping you now as a sophomore?
Yeah, I'd just say how vital it is to, one, obviously be in the weight room, but now it's kind of, I mean, yeah, we still lift, and we make that a point of emphasis, but that was more for me in the summer, just taking every rep, every day seriously in there. But more on the court, just listening to the coach and just going hard every day in practice, on the court, that kind of stuff, because I know that we got 16 guys, 17 guys on the team that are all very capable of playing out here. I mean, we're all talented and we're all hungry for minutes. So I think that's what's kind of making us great, is we're all pushing each other. We're all highly competitive, and practices have been awesome. So if you don't bring it any day in practice, you're going to get your butt kicked.
Finally, at the risk of wearing out the topic, but in a good way, the Lakeville North tradition continues. Yourself, Jack Robinson, you got Tyler, you got Nate in the past. Do you wear out your teammates maybe, especially like Janicki from White Bear Lake about the tradition that is Lakeville North?
It's not even the tradition with Janicki. It's just like how he thinks White Bear Lake is so much better than Lakeville. And we'll have all of these arguments in the locker room, and me and Jack will go up against him almost every day on how White Bear Lake has all this tradition. That's what he loves, their tradition. So, yeah, I mean, we get after it down there.
So if it was a best of seven series, how would that go?
Between Lakeville and White Bear? Oh my gosh, that's not even a question. That's Lakeville 4.
Just a clean sweep, yeah. Right?
But they're Minnesota, so I will give them the respect that they get. I mean, they're a good team. They made the state tournament when I was a senior. Janicki was a large part in that, so they're a good team. They'll put up a fight, but I got Lakeville 4.
Sounds like we need a rebuttal from Jack Janicki. Stay tuned. That's Nolan Winters. Stay with us. The Notebook is next. This is Badger Basketball from Learfield.
Do you hear that? Asthma triggers are everywhere, from dust mites, pet dander, and pollen, to smog and smoke. An asthma attack can strike anywhere, anytime. Be prepared with quick-acting Primatene Mist. Clinically proven to open airways quickly. It's the number one FDA-approved asthma inhaler available over-the-counter. Primatene Mist. Breathe easy again. Use as directed.
Why? Why take a chance? Why risk a mistake? Why say something? We all have reasons why we choose to ignore the things that give us pause, that seem out of place, that don't feel right. The word why can either paralyze us or empower us to stand up and protect what we love. So if you see something, why do you say something?
I see safe for my family.
I see safe for my friends.
I see safe for my students.
We see say for each other.
I see say because all of this matters.
We all have something worth protecting. A why that unifies this community we're all a part of. So protect your everyday. Report suspicious activity to local authorities. If you see something, say something.
What if high schools could totally rethink high school? What if we told you that some already have? Imagine high school, where the love of teaching and the love of learning are colliding, where students are learning math and history and art and physics, graduating ready for college, for careers they care about, and life. What if we told you that right now, the powerful change we're seeing in high schools across the country is possible in your neighborhood too? Don't believe it? Watch now at rethinkhighschool.org.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Matt and Air on Air.
We continue from Gainbridge Fieldhouse, the home of the Indiana Pacers, but today is the home of the Indy Classic as Wisconsin will take on the Butler Bulldogs. In the meantime, they're at the under-8 media timeout in the game ahead of us, and Texas A&M leads Purdue 59-50. The Boilermakers have been turnover-prone. Both teams have actually 14 turnovers for the Boilermakers. And Charlie, we're watching this game, we're shaking our heads because Fletcher Lawyer, Braden Smith, you know, two of their leading scorers and outstanding players, but Smith has 6 turnovers himself, and a lot of these are just very much unforced, it looks like.
Super unforced, and it's just a bit of the matchup stuff that we were talking about. Is I think Texas A&M is switching between like 1-3-1, 2-3, and I think they're just not like paying attention. It just seems like they're off, and that's not a good explanation, but all the passes are lazy. They're like long across the court passes, and yeah, just very uncommon.
Let's get a check of a couple other Big Ten teams in action right now. Penn State out of conference, all over Coppin State about halfway through the second half of that game, 74-29. And Auburn, Bruce Pearl's second-ranked Tigers,
have jumped on Ohio State. They've doubled them up, as a matter of fact, and then some. Less than 3 minutes left in the first half there in that game in Atlanta. Auburn 39, Ohio State 18. Later today, UCLA will step out of conference. Still getting used to saying that because they're playing Arizona. Wildcats, by the way, are 4-4. Very talented team. Took their, took a loss against Wisconsin on that, great night at the Kohl Center. Rutgers will play Seton Hall, and then later this afternoon, a very highly anticipated game in Champaign as Illinois will host the number one team in the country, the Tennessee Volunteers. So some pretty interesting matchups. A fun day of college basketball. Charlie, you played this, and you get, every game you get excited for, but when you can get matchups like this, I know Butler isn't as good as what a lot of Butler teams have been through the years, but it's still a name team and a name coach, and it's technically a neutral game, but Butler University is located in Indianapolis here, just a little north of downtown. So it's a good kind of game to have, I think, for Greg Gard's group.
Yeah, don't sleep on Thad Matta's teams ever. They're going to slow the ball down a little bit. They've got talented guys, just like you mentioned. They brought in a lot of talent, and those guys are good shooters from those different programs, and they like to control the defensive end. And so Wisconsin has struggled with teams who control the defensive end, like in Illinois, like in Michigan. So let's see another great matchup here today.
Was it a big deal for you to step into an NBA arena?
It was a lot more fun. I think so.
Yeah.
This used to be Conseco Fieldhouse. I remember when they switched to Big Ten tournament, and I just felt like, not just myself, but everybody on the team got way more excited to be in an arena like this because, you and I are, and I think Dave too, we've been wowing looking at all of the different things that they've got. And what we're used to is at a high level at the Kohl Center, and this is next level.
Yeah, these guys, obviously, a week ago, when they played Marquette at Fiserv Forum, the home of the Bucks, beautiful facility. I know when this place was first built, it was considered by a lot of NBA folks the crown jewel of arenas. Now, there's probably been a lot of newer ones since then, including Fiserv Forum, which is a jewel of a facility as well. But this place, it does, you do sense the history of the sport. I mean, Charlie, you're in Indiana. Natives, so you know what basketball means here to the people in this state.
Well, and you can tell how rooted everybody is. I mean, there's a lot of Purdue, a lot of Butler, obviously, because they're closer, but it's just a state that just loves basketball. And you could tell, I mean, we were walking into the arena, and the guy instantly was like, he did not like he recognized me, but he was just like, okay, height-wise, you have to be. And he's like, oh, I was here in the 2000, and it was like, oh, my gosh, right? So I think they just love basketball, and it just comes out.
You should have told him. I was going to tell him that you average like 25 a game, too. I was
very
kind. I was going to embellish it a little bit.
I was
good.
3 or 4 times what I was scoring at that time, Bennett Ball.
Yeah, that's where you are. Dick played great defense, but you guys were on offense, right? It's like 25th anniversary season, by the way, of that 2000 Final Four.
Unbelievable.
How time flies. They celebrated the back-to-back Final Four teams from the 14 and 15 run, and it does, in a lot of ways, it doesn't seem like that long ago, 25 years, right?
It doesn't.
I saw Mike Kelly. He still looks like he looked like he can get up and down the floor a few times.
I bet you I could run straight lines. Yeah. I don't know if I could zigzag. I think you lose that after you're, probably mid-30s.
Uh-huh.
You're like, all right. So, we love getting together. I love that the guys are going to be in town. And like you said, that team was special. That, along with the guys just in front of us with the Finleys and the Tracy Websters, those groups started this era of basketball that we see and we get to experience. And it's just great that we got to be a part of that.
Yeah, it's been fun crossing paths with Tracy Webster here. I saw him earlier in the week as well. He's doing some scouting work for the Dallas Mavericks and has been for a number of years, reporting to his boss, Michael Finley. So it's a very highly respected basketball minds right there.
Absolutely.
Not to mention what they did in their careers at the University of Wisconsin. Well, before we move on to our commercial break, let us first pause 10 seconds for station identification, 10 for an ID. This is Badger Basketball from Learfield.
You're listening to Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK Amory and 107.5 FM W298DK Amory and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
All right, we'll take a break. Our pregame coverage continues from Indianapolis. The Badgers getting ready to square off with the Butler Bulldogs. More to come as we continue from Indy. This is Badger Basketball from Learfield.
Hey, Badger fans. You want your family to be warm and comfortable during the brutal Wisconsin winters, right? That's why it's good to know the knowledgeable, friendly dealers at Bryan Heating and Cooling, who will do whatever it takes to keep your furnace running efficiently, no matter what the weather throws at you. Plus, score up to $2,600 in tax credits on qualifying Bryan systems and ask about local rebates and financing for qualified buyers. Find your local dealer at Bryant.com. That's Bryant.com. Proud partner of Wisconsin Athletics.
It takes hard work to be the best in the game. Planning, commitment, resilience, sweat. That's why Old Dominion Freight Line, the number one national LTL carrier for quality, works hard to be the best in the game and is proud to support those striving to be the best in theirs. Old Dominion Freight Line, official freight carrier of Wisconsin Athletics, helping the world keep promises.
Join the Wisconsin Department of Corrections and make a positive impact on lives across the state. Enjoy an excellent state benefits package and a nationally ranked pension program. The Wisconsin DOC is currently hiring correctional officers with a starting pay of over $33 per hour, plus scheduled increases and plenty of advancement opportunities. Plus, hourly rates increase for those hired from medium and maximum security positions. To learn more and apply, go to wisc.jobs. That's WISC.jobs.
Hey Badger fans, Tony Drake with Drake & Associates, proud partner of Wisconsin Athletics. How do you prepare for the big game? You strategize, right? Well, retirement is your ultimate big game. And without a solid plan, it's like stepping onto the court without practice. But here's the game changer. Claim your retirement ready toolkit for free from Drake & Associates. Just text Bucky to 262-600-2782. That's Bucky to 262-600-2782.